Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Hello, good morning. How are you? Philip in for Claire this morning. On the programme between now and 12, we're going to hear from the Munich Security Conference the day after Trump upended the Ukraine chessboard. US officials drawing up a tariffs hit list. What does Ireland have to do to stay off it? 16,000 landlords may be breaching pressure zone rent caps. Outdoor education, does it distract little minds or does it actually promote better learning? Is Prime Minister Keir Starmer the creation of Cork political Svengali Morgan McSweeney? We'll hear from the authors of a new book and we will look back at the week that was with our gathering. You can WhatsApp us on 0870 32 32, text us on 51551. Or indeed, you can email todaycb@rte.ie. Well, you just heard Vivian say it in the bulletin. The US President Donald Trump has directed his administration to draw up a new set of reciprocal tariffs on every country that the United States trades with. This will see the states levy the same tariff on other countries that they impose on US exports. All of this comes as Vice President J.D. Vance attends the Munich Security Conference with EU leaders starting to push back against Trump's plan to end the war in Ukraine. On that, shortly we will be joined by Anthony Gardner, the former US ambassador to Europe. We'll also be speaking to Piers Doherty, Sinn Féin's finance spokesperson. First this morning, let's talk to Kate English, chief economist with Deloitte. Good morning, Kate.
Good morning, Philip.
Can you explain to us how these tariffs would work, if indeed they do actually end up being imposed, and why they would be of particular concern for us in Ireland?
So I think you made a very good point there of if indeed they were imposed. So what I would say from the very outset of this is that we are at really early days with it, and it definitely kind of marks a change in approach from what we've seen coming out of the US so far with these kind of policies. Because it's not just looking at tariffs or introducing a new tariff on a country. It's more so going country by country and seeing, well, what are levies, tariffs, taxes that are in place that impact goods that are imported into the US. So the exercise in itself is very, very large and is going to take quite some time. They've set a deadline of April 1st. And I think a lot of attention will swirl around that 1st of April mark. But I think it's worth taking
the 1st of April mark, we should just say, is the point by which officials are supposed to have drawn up this list and presented it to the president.
Exactly. So we still don't know beyond that what approach will be taken, what tariffs or changes of policies would be enacted, and in what time frame they would be taken.
Okay, so it's impossible to say at this point.
It's such early days.
I was just going to say, it's impossible for us to know exactly how we should react in the absence of that information. But is there not every reason to assume that Ireland is likely to be very high up that list? Because we run a trade deficit with the United States of $87 billion, and that is the seventh largest of America's trading partners. They've already talked about imposing tariffs on three of those countries. That really does put Ireland in the crosshairs, doesn't it?
I think it puts Ireland and, frankly, every country in the crosshairs. It's the reason why they've stated on a country-by-country basis. And I think what we need to take a step back here and go, yes, Ireland is exposed. So we know that the basis of a lot of our economic growth for the last few years has come through a shift towards globalization from a global economic standpoint. And by that, I mean countries were adapting policies that made people more interdependent on other economies. This change, if it follows through, kind of shifts more towards this move towards protectionism. And what I mean by that is it's governments introducing policies to restrict international trade and to help their own domestic economies. And really, we've kind of seen this shift already begin to take place. And when I was thinking about it earlier, I almost think it starts back from the energy shock and maybe even potentially Brexit, but more so the energy shock and the impact on trade post-COVID. And it kind of exposed, at some cases, how reliant economies were on external markets, other countries for their supply chains. And it's since then that we've seen this move towards to try and protect their own. You know, we've prime examples of it even in the EU last year, approving tariffs on Chinese EVs. So this sparks for me a much wider shift in global economic policy. And with that, there will be disruption. It will be, there will be losers, winners and losers within it. And frankly, we just still don't know the full impact of that. But it will be painful if these are followed through with.
If I read between the lines correctly in what you're saying, then it would be that don't take comfort from the idea that Trump is standing against the tide of history, against this global move towards free trade, because when it comes to protectionism and imposing trade barriers, everybody's at this game now.
There has been an increase in it, yes, absolutely. So we've seen that over the past kind of 3, 4, 5 years that there's been an increase in these protectionist trade policies. And it all stems back to why are economic blocs doing it? Well, it's to try and remain competitive. We have a world that's changing quite quickly, technological advances, there's the impact of decarbonisation and climate change on top of it as well. And everyone's trying to assess, well, how do I remain competitive today, but also be competitive in the years of the future? And this is where we're really seeing an awful lot of pressure on Europe. And Europe themselves were very stark with their language. Only 2 weeks ago, the Commission, when they've clearly said the time is to act now, European economic growth is struggling. And unless we do something about it, we're going to continue to fall beyond our other kind of economic trading blocks.
What does it mean in absolute brass tacks, though? If I am exporting today and I have a shipload of goods heading across the Atlantic, to America, and then tariffs are imposed tomorrow, what do I do? What kind of money do I have to come up with in order to get my goods into the American market?
In brass tacks, again, we don't know. Until there are figures put on this, decisions made, we do not know. What I would say is that from an Irish perspective, where we are most exposed is in medical and pharmaceutical products. That's where the large increase in our exports over the last few years has come from. But it's also where we export them by value, the most amount of exports to the US. So they account for about 17% of our total value of exports leaving Ireland. And they also account for about 57% of all goods that we send to the US.
Okay,
so
but
that
theoretically,
sector is where we're seeing the largest exposure.
Theoretically, Katie, if I had 100 million worth of goods on a ferry to the United States and a 10% tariff is imposed, might I have to come up with $10 million in cash in order to get them into the country?
We don't know. Until there is that plan in place, we don't know. It sounds like I'm avoiding the question, but I'm not. And the answer is because it's such early days here. We do not know. Well, yes, this will become more expensive if it is followed through with, but there's a long way to go in terms of what is actually going to come out from this.
Okay, well, fair enough.
We're
but you do
a few
have
hours post Trump's announcement.
You do have an answer to this question, though, and that is that tariffs only work for the country that imposes them if there is domestically produced alternative to the good that is being imported. So, not to be indelicate about it, but where is America going to get all of its Viagra if not from us?
That's part of what some of this is. When we look at this switching from protectionism, from to globalization to protectionist policies, part of that is trying to drive domestic growth. And unfortunately, there will be painful impacts of that, both within the countries that are imposing the new tariffs and levies and those that are feeling the brunt of them. Because as you rightly said, if those products, goods are not already within that country, it will increase costs costs there as well. And that's where there's a much bigger question here too that we have. And if you read any economic outlook, for example, the IMF one released only last week as well, that there's still quite a large risk globally that we could see an increase in inflation once again, because tariffs or this protectionist type of trade policy does, in theory, lead you to see increase in prices, increases in inflation. Because if you're bringing it in, you're paying those extra taxes, levies, the consumer will feel the brunt of that. Okay. So there's a wider risk here as well of what does it mean for inflation? Does it actually help consumers in whatever block we're talking about? And overall, there's a viewpoint that that restrictionist or protectionist policy more so restricts economic growth than allowing it to flourish, which is what we've experienced over the last number of years.
Kate English, Chief Economist with Deloitte, thank you very much. Piers Doherty, good morning to you.
Good morning to you.
Obviously, we're in an area that's highly speculative, as Kate is saying. We still don't know the detail of what's going to happen here. But I don't know if you were listening to Cliff Taylor of the Irish Times on Morning Ireland. He was saying that this has the potential to completely upend the way that we currently trade. What, in your mind, is the worst case scenario here?
Yeah, and I agree with Cliff. And we have been here to a certain degree before during Trump's first presidency when there was a trade war initiated. If you remember, there was a tariffs being placed on aluminium and steel. Europe reciprocated with tariffs on
bourbon and Harley Davidson's
sensitive products at that time, and had a second wave to be installed. But the Biden administration came in and everything went back to the way it was. So the potential here is that the agreements that have been there for many, many years are now upended. And really the big question is, what is President Trump looking for? Because we know he is a transactional politician. We know it's not very clear what he wants out of this, whether it's jobs to America or whether it's something further, whether it's about Europe's plans, for example, the digital services tax, which Ireland is opposed to. Is it trying to protect the interests of the Googles and the Amazons out there? Or is it the fact that there is investigations currently under way by Europe in terms of the DTA, in terms of Meta, and other companies?
So what are you saying? Here.
It's not clear yet what is actually his real intentions behind all of this.
Indeed, it's not. But what is your best guess, or what would your advice to government be? Should they treat this as Donald Trump trying to shake the tree and see what he can get out of it? Or should they treat this as Donald Trump trying to cut down the tree and see what goes back in its place?
Look, I think you have to treat this as very serious. Any major trading partner in America is a huge trading partner of Ireland. We obviously have many jobs that are dependent on American investment, and it's not a one-way street. We also create a huge amount of jobs in America, over 100,000, and one of the largest investors in America, and we have those relationships. But when a trading partner makes comments like these, regardless of whether you believe that there will be follow through in full or not, you have to take it serious. The issue of trade and tariffs fall under the European competence. So it will be Europe who will be negotiating in relation to this. And I'm sure that, you know, European leaders will have a contingency plan. And we know that they do have a contingency plan in relation to reciprocal tariffs. That's the playbook here in relation to how this will play out. And the way to win a trade war is not to be in one. So there's no winners in relation to this here. And the losers are consumers, who will see higher prices in relation to all of this here. So I do think, look, you know, this is early days. We do have to take deep breaths in relation to this here. And we have to probably get a better understanding of what this is about, because, you know, there was many things said by Trump. Some of it made no sense whatsoever in relation to VAT.
And awful lot of it might never actually come to pass.
Yes, he was talking about regulation and cases and so on and so forth. So it was very broad brushstroke. And this is a paper that's been produced, and then the impact of the impact of the potential measures is to be assessed by October. So there is a bit of time, and, you know, and we've seen how there was tariffs announced in terms of Canada and Mexico.
So cool heads needed rather than setting our heads on fire. What then is your advice to government, given that this hit list is to be drawn up by the 1st of April and we have the potential for FaceTime either on or around the 17th of March? What should the Taoiseach be saying if he does get into the Oval Office?
Look, I think, you know, when I raised this with the Minister for Finance yesterday, it's not just this announcement in terms of the tariffs. The American administration has announced they're withdrawing from the OECD process, and that is in relation to taxation. And that causes major problems for Ireland because we now have transposed into our legislation the fact that we would have to tax American companies potentially that have never set foot in Ireland just because they have a subsidiary here. And that's something that was never envisaged when this agreement was there. So again, what we need to actually be using our influence on, talking to our partners in Europe and hopefully that Trump comes back into the fold. The best places to deal with these here are in the structures that we have, whether it's the WTO in terms of the World Trade Organization or the OECD, which deals with the issues of tax. And that's where these issues have to be dealt with. And there they are where they're best resolved. And as I said, there's no winners in this here. The American public will not be the winners in any type of trade war. And the question is what is really, what's the intention? Is this a negotiation? Is this, you know, going all in and using your fiscal muscle? And what is really the intention behind that? What is the part of the deal that he wants out of that? And that's the job now for leaders to understand. Okay, but I think Trump will hear very clearly that, you know, Europe is not impotent in relation to this here. They will have, if he proceeds with this, they will have measures in their top drawer that will cause problems for consumers in Europe.
Suffice it to say, Piers Doherty, you're not joining anybody else on the opposition benches in looking for Ireland to boycott the opportunity that St. Patrick's Day presents.
Look, I hear what has been said. I think the Taoiseach obviously has a unique opportunity, which isn't afforded to anybody else in terms of, you know, actually having been in the year of Trump. But let's be clear, we're talking about tariffs here as well. And we're talking about America's role in terms of tax. And that's important that we relay our concerns very clear, even though, as I said, it is a European competence in terms of the issue of tariffs. But the issue of Gaza, the issue of Palestine, the comments from the president, which are absolutely appalling, have to be made very, very loud and clear by Ireland. I think Ireland does not stand with those comments. The idea that he is looking at Gaza, which has seen the genocide, a war, and unleashed.
And
by
you
Israel
can't do that if you're not in the room with him.
Property development is repugnant, in my view.
And you can't do that if you're not in the room with him. Is that your point?
Well, I think if the Taoiseach, the first thing is that we don't know if the Taoiseach is actually travelling. There's quite a bit of confusion, whether it's the early days of the administration or not, but it appears that nobody is able to confirm whether there will be an invitation sent this year.
But we should be lobbying for it. Is that your point?
Sorry?
We should be lobbying for an invitation rather than sitting back and waiting for one.
No, I think Trump will issue an invitation if he issues an invitation. What I'm saying is if the Taoiseach is afforded that, he needs to make the issues not just in relation to the domestic issues, the European issues, but he also needs to make a very, very clear statement, which I believe is what the view of the Irish people is, that what he is talking about in terms of Gaza is simply unacceptable and that it should not be, it shouldn't even have been uttered, never mind contemplated and following through. And those issues also would need to be addressed. If he gets that invitation.
Piers Doherty, thank you very much. Well, Donald Trump brought US President Vladimir Putin in from the cold yesterday while US Defence Secretary Pete Hegseth set out hardline positions on EU defence and NATO. To analyse the new shape on relations forged this week between the European Union and the United States, I'm joined now by Anthony Gardner, former US Ambassador to Europe. Good morning, Ambassador Gardner. How are you?
Good morning. Very well, thank you.
Can you tell me, how do you think the tectonic plates have been rearranged this week?
Well, look, it's a very bad start, in my view. Bad for Europe, bad for Ukraine. The idea that something as profound as a peace deal for Ukraine could possibly occur without both Europe and Ukraine in the room is not a good start. It's inconceivable. It's like going back to the old days of Yalta, right? Deciding the future of countries without those countries participating. So that suggests to me that any deal, quote unquote, is not going to be a durable deal. The second, which has been pointed out by many people, is to give away some of the key negotiating points without even starting a negotiation doesn't strike me as very wise. For example, Ukraine not being a member of NATO and in agreeing that all the territory that is now being controlled by Russia would end up in Russia, which may be the reality, but one doesn't start negotiating giving away key points. So it's a pretty bad start. I don't think, you know, this is anything close to where the deal is going to shake out. And fundamentally, it's because Putin considers Ukraine to be a fiction, a creation of the West, a creation of the United States. He believes it's a mortal threat to himself. I'm convinced of that. Because a prosperous, democratic, stable, Russian-speaking country close to Russia is an example of what Russia could be and is not. So I think he's going to play for much, much more than what he's already got. And partly because he thinks he's winning. So I think this is only the beginning.
Okay. It may be unpalatable to Ukrainians. It may be offensive to Vladimir Zelensky personally. But when you have a proxy war, which is what this is, between the United States and Russia, was this always not going to be decided at that level and everybody else was going to get pushed aside?
This is not a proxy war. So I would fundamentally disagree with that. And it's also, I think, a bit insulting the Ukrainians to say it's a proxy war. I know this is a line that's fed into the European media. The Ukrainian people are supportive of the war. It's true, they're tired. It's gone on for a very long time. But this would not go on for so long if it were simply a proxy war in that other countries were somehow propping up Ukraine and telling them what to do. It is an independent country, by the way. Under the Budapest Accords in the late 1990s, not only the UK and the United States, but also Russia signed that agreement, recognizing its borders and saying it was a sovereign country. Now, do we believe that a sovereign country has the right to defend itself? I think we do, and I think Europe particularly has an interest in ensuring that a model of a democratic and hopefully stable and somewhat prosperous country can survive. So, we have to accept reality. Zelensky obviously has to accept reality.
Is the big reality there that this conflict would not have lasted 3 years without $300 billion from the United States?
Well, it probably would. No, if we had said no support, no financial support and no military support, it probably would not have lasted as long. That's true. But that doesn't mean that it's a proxy war. I think we're absolutely right. If anything, I think the criticism is that we were dishing out our support in dribs and drabs rather slowly. I think Zelensky has overdone his criticism that we should have provided everything up front. Now, I think that's an exaggeration. But we probably could have been faster. And on the European side also, we were very slow at the very beginning in providing things that were demanded. You remember the days when Germany was saying, well, provide helmets and blankets. It took a very long time for us to provide tanks and planes and munitions.
Okay. One other question, though. You say that the negotiations have started by the Americans giving so much away, conceding so much. Again, is it not just a reflection of reality that under Donald Trump, America was never going to put U.S. boots on the ground in Ukraine to guarantee a peace deal?
Well, that's correct. He said so. But still, you don't start a negotiation by saying we agree to some of your key demands. By that, I mean NATO and the fact that they've controlling 20% of Ukrainian territory. The key issue really is security guarantees. It's not the question of, the 20% of the territory which is controlled. Because Zelensky is not going to want, and in fact may be removed or if not that, even assassinated, hate to say it, if he agrees to a deal that is not accompanied by meaningful security guarantees. I alluded to the Budapest Accords, which turned out to be a meaningless piece of paper, right? How could he possibly agree to a deal unless it's a deal that's imposed on him at force, whereby there is no guarantee, including European troops on the ground, significant troops, for a significant period of time. If he agrees to do a deal like that under pressure, then we're giving Putin exactly what he wants, because Ukraine becomes a very weak, unstable country that could, in fact, implode. That would be an absolutely terrible outcome, particularly for Europe.
Anthony Gardner, a former US ambassador to Europe, thank you very much for joining us this morning with that analysis. Up next, is the Residential Tenancies Board about to launch a crackdown on landlords who illegally hike rents?
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.